Wait a minute, was that Evan Mobley?
Yeah, that was Evan Mobley. He doesn't care as Hollywood game.
You got any more of that? You got any more of that motivation?
Oh, of course.
Tough talking Evan Mobley?
That is as fired up as I've heard Evan Mobley.
It's just one game. I mean, you can't win a series with one game, so you still have the same belief, but like nothing wavered at all. You sweep this under the rug and keep focused on the next game.
Franklin Delano Mobley.
Attica.
They came home. They came out with energy. I feel like we didn't match that, and they out-rebounded us and basically was just feeding off the crowd's energy. And next game, we got to come out here and stay way stronger and match their intensity and hold them to tougher shots.
I fight and you may die. Run and you'll live at least a while. And dying in your beds. Wait a minute. There's too much bass in my voice for that. Sorry. Hold on.
That's right. Octave higher.
And dying. Do it again. Give me some more Evan Mobley. You got any more?
It makes sense. They're at home, so they got the crowd with them, and they start knocking out shots. So you usually get that swagger. So we got to make it tougher on them and come up with the rebounds, and maybe the swagger isn't as strong next game.
And dying in your beds many, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance? Just one chance. Come back here and tell our enemies that it may take our lives, but they're never going to take our freedom.
They started making a few shots, and I feel like they got their rhythm going. And also the offensive rebounding in the beginning of the game, they got to make sure opportunities to make shots. And from there, it was just they just kept it rolling with the energy. So we got to find a way to stop that and stop the momentum.
You don't want the truth, because deep down in places, you don't talk about at parties. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of very freedom that I provide them. The question's the manner in which I provide it.
The offensive rebound, I feel like them just getting extra chances to make those shots. I feel like at home, our first two games, we would come up with those rebounds and get out in transition. But this time, they got extra chances to make those shots, and then I got them going.
You want answers, Kenny?
Did you order the code red? I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
There's a weird energy in this room.
There is. I agree with
There's
you.
There's a weird energy, because I'm telling you, and I don't disagree with you. But in the grand scheme
but
of it.
Here you go, disagreeing.
No,
with
but
me.
It's the truth, because there's plenty. Like Christopher on Twitter, 216-474-0092. Christopher on Twitter. Ken, you're talking like you're in baseball mode already. This is a playoff basketball series, not game 24 out of 162. Fans are upset because this should not happen in the first place. Also, if it's a big blowout, why not mix up lineups and go inside to paint to the bigs? Where? What am I going to mix up? Am I going to find anything out when clearly they are not doing anything? It's a bad day at the office, guys. That's what it is. So you're not going to learn anything from this. And honestly, what's JB want to do to maybe put something out there to give Jamal Mosley anything to use against him that they could use in games that matter, like tomorrow afternoon? Like, there is a cat and mouse. We did this in the NFL with Stefanski at the end of the season in 2020 when everybody was yelling at me, and who ended up being right, by the way, at the Pittsburgh game and holding back in the fourth quarter because he knew they were going to play them in the next week, or there was a strong chance they would play them in the next week. So they're not going to put anything there. They're going to try to win as they did. And they won as they did. It got a little dicey, but they did it. And it's the same thing here. I'm not going to sit out there and try all this other crap and have anything that you could find on me either in this series or the next one. And you know why there's a weird energy here? Because you guys all know. You can be as mad as you want, and that's fine. I don't care if you're mad. That's cool. But you all know what this was. This is one of the worst box scores you've ever seen. Regular season, preseason, postseason, doesn't matter. It's a throwaway garbage box score. If this was the series last year where they're playing the Knicks and they were playing their asses off and they got stoned inside and they couldn't hit shots from the outside because the defense was so good and Mitchell Robinson was laughing at him and you could tell they were trying but they weren't tough enough, they weren't experienced enough, they weren't men yet in the NBA. If that was the case, then I'd be 100% with you. But you've watched this team beat the brakes, and I almost said something different, of the Orlando Magic over the first two games of the series, and then they lose by 38. I'm not going to lose my mind over this. Even though it sounds like I am, I'm going to be measured. You want to vent it out? You vent it out. You go right on ahead. They give you every opportunity in the world. They didn't play well. They played like garbage. They've played like garbage here over the second half of the season, up and down. You had Darius Garland. He had another suck-ass game. So you can go ahead and complain about that. Fine. They gave you everything you want. But I can't, over a series where, yes, they set up their opponent. They set up their opponent. But if they were getting beat like the way they did to the New York Knicks, and they set this up, yeah, man, I'd be screaming and yelling, and Owen would be have to hit the dunk button because I'd be so mad, and I'd be calling Kobe Altman the Wizard of Oz and all the other crap that I've thrown down the street over them over these last couple of months. I'm not going to do it. I don't have to. I have to be measured because it was such a bad day, and I can tell you guys. Now, Mitch, I don't know you that well yet, and you're over in the sausage closet, but I know you two, and I can feel this energy in this room. I can feel this energy in this room because in your heart of hearts, you know I'm right. You both know I'm right. I ain't saying you're wrong, Owen. I'm not saying you're wrong. That is a generalized thought. But you too know I'm right.
Look, if this would have been the Knicks and they would have lost by this much, I'd be getting ready for all sorts of offseason maneuvers. The fact is, they picked the Magic for a reason, and they have the advantages in this series. I don't think you can just distill it down to three-point variance, but that is a part of it. You shot terribly. They shot amazingly. I don't think the Magic are going to shoot that well again, but I knew they'd be tougher. I knew the games would be tougher down in Orlando. You still shouldn't lose by 38. I will add... I will add that, you know, pretty famous season in 2016, they lost by 33 points in Game 2 to the Golden State Warriors. They came back and won by 30 the very next day.
Yeah, that was the NBA Finals.
That was the NBA Finals.
Yeah, LeBron James.
This is the Magic. But I would not be surprised if the Cavs easily cruise in Game 4 by 20 points.
Well, I can see that. They're the better team with better players, right? They have a better roster construction. They, you know, if Mitchell is truly not 100% right now, then they might not have the best player.
Then that's another story
on the court. But the problem for me, Ken, between the two teams and the three games that we've seen, is that in the first two games, when the Magic were down at the half by 12 and 14, I think,
they kept fighting.
The Cavs were down 12 last night at the half.
No, they were done.
And then they gave up 35 in the third, and they scored 16.
They scored
16 points.
I respect that point. I respect that point.
And Owen,
they didn't. That wasn't when they pulled everybody and said, okay, we're going to give up now.
But Owen, in what you're saying is indicative of a bigger problem that we have been ranting and raving about, where it's like, what are you going to do without Donovan Mitchell? Do you always have to go into the gutter without Donovan Mitchell? Can you not play as a team?
But
that is absolutely, I totally agree with you on that. But they set this thing up, and that's why I could see them going out, and you can too, going out and beating up on Orlando tomorrow, making it a 3-1 series to come back home. And then I'm going to look like an idiot because I'm firing off on all cylinders and getting sweaty and
mad
over
a bad loss.
But I
think the biggest problem for people, I wasn't happy about how the way Game 82 went, and so the whole week I didn't get happy, and I'm the one that clicks the button for the Cavs music, right? And we didn't play the Cavs music, and that's fine, but I thought – they gave me this glimmer of hope in the first two games that, hey, they were right, I was wrong, let them do their thing. And then last night kind of just proved to me that, yeah, they're probably going to win this series. And then, you know, even though they play the Celtics very well, they've always played very well against the Celtics, we're done after that. So basketball's kind of done for me.
Well, I think Owen's not alone in that.
You're not alone in that.
I think everybody in the room. I think everybody in the room understands what the next round is going to look like. Whether or not those games are going to be entertaining.
Sometimes you're just not ready to give it up, guys. And I felt like I've been in those relationships where, hey, I'm not ready to give it up yet, and the other side's ready to give it up, and you go, no, we're going to fight for this, and then you come to the realization this isn't going to work out. So. Last night was that point for me.
I think for me, there is a time for panic. And it's not this morning. It may be on Saturday afternoon. If Donovan Mitchell goes out there and he's limping around and they go out there and they suck up the room again and they don't try, then you'll get what you want. You want the fire and brimstone and anger, you'll get it all. You'll get it all, I promise. But every time, every single time, and this is what makes them so frustrating, every time I have let them have it, with everything I got, they go out the very next night and they do something great. And every night I think they got it solved. Every morning I come in here and I think that they got it. It's going to be smooth sailing, green grass and high tides forever. They go out there and they embarrass themselves and they embarrass the city and they embarrass the organization and they make you look like a moron. It's been that way the entire year. And they make me worried about Donovan Mitchell's future and the whole thing. And I'm going to be measured about it. And it's not a given the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to tell them that they need to trust themselves because, again, if you don't win this series, then it's all up in the air. It's just that simple. I don't know if Kobe Altman's going to be back. I don't know. Certainly, I don't think that J.B. Bickerstaff would be back. And Donovan Mitchell, it's going to be an interesting conversation to have. It's right there. Chuck and Shaker, yellow.
Hey, good morning, guys.
All right, Chuck.
Hey, you see how Mobley was talking? These guys are a product of the coaching, man. They don't have no sense of urgency. You know what I mean?
I think you could have Knight in there, and Evan Mobley's going to sound the same way.
Well, still, no sense of urgency from the coaching staff. You know what I mean? They're on the road at Orlando. They act like they're going to Disney World down there instead of going down there to take care of business. And then they need to take Strus out of the starting lineup and put a Okoro back in there. At least he would play defense, you know? And then stop sending Merrill to the arc. He needs to take it to the basket. If he could take an offensive fly foul from those big guys, he can take the ball to the hole. I mean, they got it. They got him down as far as a three-point shot. He's not going to get that. He's got to start going right back to the hole. I mean, why put him out there and he's not doing anything?
Yeah, I mean, when you empty the bench, you got Tristan Thompson and Damian Jones out there. You know what everything's going on. So I don't know how much method there is madness.
Most of the good shots that the Cavs get all season long predominantly involve Donovan Mitchell and the attention that he creates and his ability to break down a defense. What I saw last night out of Donovan for most of the night was a guy that was not able to do that. That is where, if you're wondering when I'm nervous, that's when I'm nervous. He did bounce back at times during that game. It was very inconsistent. There were times when I thought he was cooked, and then all of a sudden I saw him getting by guys pretty easily and getting to the bucket. But that is what I'm going to be watching Saturday at 1 o'clock. Is he able to do that? Is he able to get back to breaking down defenses? Jalen Suggs caused some problems yesterday being disruptive.
There's some gold there for the Browns at 54. And they might want to go up and get it. They might want to go up and reach for it.
Let's talk some draft.
We might see a little bit of action coming up later on tonight, folks. Earlier than you think. I'll explain next on The Fan. I know a dog that will hunt.
His name Andrew Berry?
Well, Browns are at pick 54. Just want to make sure. You know who's still on the board, right?
Quite a lot of players, actually.
Yeah, plenty of players,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, there's a ton of players.
At least 200.
Oh, I think it's like 300, maybe 4.
Can I interest you folks?
On your board, maybe.
How many are on yours?
Can I interest you people?
Two.
And a young man named Ladd McConkey.
Oh, wow. Why does Ken like Ladd McConkey? That's interesting.
I hate you. God, I hate your guts. I should have known that you were going to do that. I hate you for it. You pulled me into it, and I hate you for it. Everybody loves Ladd McConkey.
Do they?
You jerk.
Especially Ken Carr.
That's not true.
I mean,
that's a Ken Carmen classic.
Most in our audience
come
might.
Come on, Owen. Lord almighty. We mean most in our audience.
I'm not exactly sure the exact demographic breakdown.
216-474-0092. Do you like Ladd McConkey or do you not like Ladd McConkey? He is a wide receiver out of Georgia. Very good route runner. He is a gym rat. He's a student of the game.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's really, all those things.
He's got a mental aptitude. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, he is.
He's going to pick up the game very quickly on that end?
Yeah, he's a grinder.
Okay.
That's what he is.
I like that.
And the Browns are at pick 54. And I got to tell you, I don't know if they're going to be staying there tonight. I don't know if they're going to be staying at pick 54.
So you think they could be moving up?
There's some names out there, Matt Cooper, DeJean.
See, Dustin Fox really likes him.
Well, he is also a gym rat and a student of the game.
Oh, he's smart, too. Really smart.
Really smart player.
That guy has his nose in the playbook.
He does. emails. And also went to Iowa, which is really par for the course. Anyway.
And apparently most want to move him to safety already.
Yeah, I saw that. And I go, why is that?
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
Why do you say something like that? Would you be opposed to moving up, giving up picks?
I'd be surprised.
You said
yeah.
that they need more picks.
Yeah, I'd be surprised just because of that.
Let me tell you. Let me tell you.
Especially considering the talent that seems to be on the board. But I don't know. I mean, I hear that Andrew Berry's very aggressive. That's what everybody likes to say.
I don't have my draft value chart, right? So I don't know how many, like, to get up to, like, 33, I don't know how many you could get up to, like, in the second round, your second, your third, your fifth. Like, I'm sure you could try to make that work here and there. But if, like, Ladd McConkey ain't off the board and it's starting to get close, I say, fine. If Cooper DeJean is not off the board, hey, you guys want to sit there and trade Greg Newsom, there's maybe a reason to trade Greg Newsom right there. That's a guy with a first-round grade. That's a legitimate guy with a first-round grade. Because you have all these offensive guys go off the board.
I don't think Mitchell from Texas is going to be there by the time that they are selected. I thought he would go to the 49ers, and the 49ers kind of surprised people with
their
pick.
Got Kool-Aid McKinstry still there for you. Sorry, go ahead with what you were saying.
I mean, are we even sure it's going to be a wide receiver?
No.
I see so many Browns fans that, you know, the receiver is always going to be the sexy position. So you are definitely brushing up on wide receiver options. I just don't think they're going that way because I also think they don't want to close the book on Cedric Tillman.
Yes.
I think they're excited about Cedric Tillman. I think they have reason to be excited. I know there were things we saw that we didn't love. I think even the coaches kind of talked about, hey, he's got to know the playbook. He's got to know the routes. Like but I don't think they're going to box him out by doing that because the minute you would draft somebody in the second round, you kind of feel like you'd be closing the book on Cedric Tillman already, and that seems premature.
Al Copenhagen says that he questions, he asks, guys, is Ladd scrappy? Ladd is scrappy.
Boy, that is...
Him and Cooper DeJean happen to be scrappy. Yep. 216-474-0092.
Ladd McConkey would play really well in West Park. Cam's Corners. I think they would really
So does Al Copenhagen for that matter. I'll tell you that right now. Yeah. I know you want more swings at it. I think next year is the time for more swings at it. I think that right now, you look at their roster, you could just go into the season with that as your 53 and call that what it is. Now, there's always going to be, hey, you want to bring these guys in and Mark says he's deceptively fast. Yep, Ladd is deceptively fast. So is Cooper DeJean. You want to bring these guys in and give them a chance to compete and see if they could do it. But, I mean, you're a team right now, like Minnesota, after their trade yesterday, I think they have two picks next year. I think that's like it. I think they got like a first and a fifth, and that's like it. So Minnesota has themselves, I think it might be a second. Minnesota is going for it here, and they brought in J.J. McCarthy for crying out loud. You have a veteran quarterback. Now, you have wide receivers. Now, I don't want to forget about Elijah Moore, but Elijah Moore more than likely ain't going to be here at the end of this coming year. And then you still have Amari Cooper. Well, I don't know about Amari Cooper's future just yet. I'd like to extend him, but we'll see how that goes. You'll have Jerry Jeudy. You have David Njoku. We'll see how Cedric Tillman develops, but I don't know how much of a chance he's going to get to develop on the field in front of fans because you still have all those guys. And so do you want to bring in Ladd McConkey, and do you think that he cracks that surface and becomes the third wide receiver instead of Elijah Moore? Maybe that's a possibility for everybody. I know that everybody loves Ladd McConkey, and they will be lined up down the street to shake Andrew Berry's hand if he moves up and gets Ladd McConkey.
Well, just how would that look in this new offense that they are creating? Let's start to think about, you know, what this is. We haven't seen it, right? We've only seen the offense that they rolled out last year with Deshaun Watson and then quickly how they pivoted once Joe Flacco came in. What do we think the offense even looks like? And how does somebody like Ladd McConkey fit into the confines of that offense? It's tough because we don't even know who's calling the plays right now.
The problem is, if I start saying those things, it sounds like I'm going back to the old joke, and I'm not, about how he would fit the offense. He runs a good route.
I am being genuine in this case.
I know, but it might sound like we're starting to... We joke so much, and it might sound like we're making jokes again. But the things that he does well...
There's all sorts of truth and humor, Kenny.
That's true.
You know.
216-474-0092. Jim in Strongsville. Hello.
I love that kid. I think he's got a lot of moxie. He's a very cerebral player. I think he's the kind of guy that we have to have.
Teacher's pet, really.
Oh, first guy in, last guy out. He does all the little things that make, he's a glue guy. He's one of those guys that's really going to make things happen for the Browns.
All right, that's enough. Is this just a joke?
You're just doing shtick. Is that what we're doing?
Listen, I think Satan's calling back at 9:45.
Leave the low-hanging fruit to us.
By the way,
coming in hot at 9:45.
That first one in, last one out thing. If only Kevin Stefanski off the air. If only we could dive into what he truly believes about guys showing off about being the first one in. Because that was the realest Kevin Stefanski I have ever seen, and yep. I loved it.
Well, but what he said is absolutely true, and we were glad to hear it. So do you not want to move up? Do you just want to pick at 54, or do you want to get more picks?
Yeah, the way it's...
Because if we're talking... I see your point, because if we're talking development, like, okay, well, you can develop guys later.
Which I know stinks because they have not done well in the third round for wide receivers, right? Like, they have not shown, or they have not instilled a lot of confidence in being able to do that based on their selections the last 3 years.
They've done well in the second round. I don't think altogether they've done very well in the third round.
Yeah, so I know it's like, oh, wait, you're going down. Why? To get more picks in which rounds? Those rounds that you haven't necessarily done, although where Martin Emerson was taken, certainly looks good. Did you find it at all intriguing yesterday? What, you had 6 quarterbacks taken in the first round. You had 7 wide receivers and what, 1 tight end? I mean, that's almost half your first round are either targets or quarterbacks. And it pushed all the defensive players and it pushed all the non-quarterbacks down, which guaranteed that like Pittsburgh and Cincinnati were going to get exactly who they wanted.
This is going to be some analysis. Where
they
continue.
Got. This is getting into nitty-gritty football analysis and nitty-gritty draft analysis.
That's okay.
But we have seen, right, the gravitational pull that goes on in the first round with quarterbacks. All right, we already knew that. But wide receivers, too. Like, if you ever want one of the premier wide receiver targets, if you're not in the top half of the draft, you're just not getting them. Like, it's amazing target-wise that you just have no shot to get them.
Well, you got these, because I want to go through here. Like, Caleb Williams goes number 1. And then at number 9, they go back because, you know, they took Michael Penix in Atlanta. You get Roma Dunze. Mm-hmm. And then you find out that Caleb Williams was telling them that he really likes Roma Dunze to give him a target. They're trying to make these guys, I think, general managers know that these guys are not as equipped as they used to be. And they're being forced to play in different offenses. They might not necessarily be ready, but they also know that, damn it, there's a lot of pressure on these guys to play and to play as soon as they can, because owners have become giant fans, and they want to see these guys. They want to make money with these guys. And so now you have to go out, and when you get a guy, you have to find a way to make him comfortable. And so you get a security blanket wide receiver. You get Roma Dunze out of Washington to help out Caleb Williams, even though you already have Keenan Allen there.
Yeah.
You already have DJ Moore there. You already have Cole Kmet there. I mean, those are good players. And so I think that, yeah, that's part of the reason where, hey, let's go out. We have a young quarterback. Let's go out and get some of these wide receivers for our football team. Kyler Murray, still young, definitely under fire for a lot of people. And what did they do? They decided they're still in the Kyler Murray business. They went out and they got a wide receiver in Marvin Harrison Jr. There's another part where I thought the Giants pick with Malik Nabers was a terrible pick. Not because of Malik Nabers, because of the sunk cost of what they have with Daniel Jones. So they're going to continue to go through because they paid him, they had to pay him, and they're going to continue to go through this dog and pony show of trying to tell people that Daniel Jones is a worthy NFL starter in this league, and he's not. And the only thing that I would say is that I would hope Malik Nabers doesn't go south on you before you have a chance to get a real quarterback in there that can actually throw to him. But you have these systems here where you have high picks, young quarterbacks, guys who are spinning because you're firing your head coaches every other year, firing your general managers every other year, and you can't necessarily jump off the quarterback every single year. Some cases you can, and we saw that with Arizona, oddly enough. But there's a lot of cases you can't, and you have to decide how these guys are going to work out for you. And also, you know, we got to put in how much the owners like these guys. You think that David Tepper's going to give up on Bryce Young? It's certainly going to take a hell of a lot longer for him than it is any of us, considering what they gave up.
But what's amazing to me is we just saw when it was, and again, the way that they qualified it, hits and misses in the NFL draft, whether guys signed the second contract or not. And we went into that yesterday about Baker Mayfield. But quarterbacks, wide receivers, 2 of the bigger bust positions in the first round. And yet you saw again, quarterbacks, wide receivers, 1 tight end, they were all up there. And the odds are a lot of these are going to be total disasters with those picks. Like, does it mean that we're not learning, or does it mean you can't just stop taking, you know, you can't stop throwing darts just because before there have been a lot of misses. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. That doesn't necessarily, you know, carve out exactly what your pick is going to be.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Also, I heard something yesterday, and this is weird territory for me. Because you got local guys, you fall in love with local guys. Albert Breer, yesterday on Afternoon Drive, on Michael Hall, the local kid out of Ohio State, which some people had him at 54 to the Cleveland Browns.
Michael Hall is interesting just because I think he brings something that Cleveland's been looking for, a disruptive athletic defensive tackle, right? Now, the question with him is going to be the red flags and the personality, and are you okay with it, right? And that's something that I think different. Like, there are teams that have him off the board. So, you know, I think that's something you're going to have to kind of wrap your head around. And I would say he'd be one where if you didn't meet with him, you're not taking. Like, you probably had to meet with him and get comfortable with him. And I think kind of like wrap your arms around the idea of taking him and have a plan for him. But, like, you know, I think the upside of it, the upshot of it, you could have a first round talent. Right. Like, so he'd be the one that I sort of look at and say, yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
See, I'm shocked by hearing that from Albert Breer, because I live down the street from the high school he went to. I think there's a lot of people in that town that they would definitely start cussing in Albert Breer's direction over what was just said. And I know that Albert Breer ain't making it up. He's just reporting what he's reporting, what he's heard.
Well,
right?
And Albert has a direct line to Ohio State.
But it's
so it also,
it's true.
It also caused you to wonder, what is he hearing?
But it blew my mind, because I'm telling you right now, I don't think you find anybody in that town that's going to say a bad thing about him. I don't think you're going to find anybody in that town that's going to say a bad thing about him.
It brings into focus.
I was shocked hearing that yesterday.
Well, it brings into focus a larger question, right? Like, first of all, I always joke about how many guys are labeled first-round guys. Mm-hmm. Whether they're taken in the first mm-hmm. round, then they're that's 32, right? 32 guys are automatically first-round talent.
Yeah.
It seems like three-fourths of the second round, guys, somebody has a first-round grade on. So fans go, hey, we got a first-round guy in the second round. Happens every year. Every Browns pick that's ever been taken in the second round, oh, first round, had a first-round grade. So now we get to the third round, and you start adding up, well, that guy was injured. Oh, he tore his ACL. He would have been first round. Or there's red flags. We're up to 100 guys now that should have gone in the first round. Like, it happens every year, and it kind of muddies the discourse on how we talk about these guys.
216-474-0092. I got Daryl at 8 o'clock. Would he take any guys with some red flags there, especially at pick 54, and a local guy, which I'm surprised to hear that out of Albert Breer, and I want to hear something from Daryl on this issue. But next, how long you got to stick around to call yourself a good fan? Fix My Life, coming up next on The Fan.
Sometimes you just need a fix.
FML, my life.
My life.
FML.
Fix my life.
Kenny, what do we do?
Fixing lives.
My life.
How long do you have to stay watching to consider yourself a good fan when your Cavs are getting blown out? I'm serious.
So I look for the little things. So I was nerding out yesterday, and my vaunted 2-TV setup was really just my phone.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to tweet, so I didn't want to get the picks spoiled, so I didn't need my phone. I stuck with it until about 2 minutes left in the fourth. I'm a weirdo.
I think that's fine.
I'm a weirdo.
Actually, I think that's really good.
Yeah. I wouldn't tell anybody else to do that. I wouldn't expect anybody else to do that.
Okay, so what do you think is, because you like to be a gatekeeper here and say, well, are we a real sports city or are we not a real sports city? Like, I am too dreading. Well, now I don't know, because at first I thought that the ratings should still be bigger for a Cavs game, and then I didn't think it was going to be a laugher by the end of the third quarter, and really by the end of the first quarter. I didn't think it was going to go that way. So now I'm like, well, did the draft do better in Cleveland?
Yeah,
than
it worked
the game
out
did?
Perfectly for the draft to do better, because you could just tune it over. I mean, turn it over at halftime, right? And then keep an eye on the score, or maybe watch the first 3 minutes of the second half.
Yeah,
and then you're done. You saw the players had basically waved the white flag 3 minutes into that third quarter. I mean, they scored 16 points.
Do you got to watch the whole thing?
No, you don't.
So
I wouldn't expect anything.
Because I watched when the Browns got hammered by Houston, and I just sat there and just took it in. And I told you, somebody sent me a video of their dog humping a pillow in front of the television. That was the most entertaining thing. I was like, you know what? I'm going to sit here. I'm going to have some drinks. I'm going to watch this whole game and take it in, because, I don't know when they're ever going to go again, and it's such a big deal. I got to make sure.
You have to watch the whole Browns playoff game, or any game for that matter, because, you know, you're also analyzing every guy, their body language. You're looking for something to support an argument you might have made.
Yeah.
Hey, did they give up on the coach? Are they mad at the coach? Are they feuding with a coordinator or somebody on the sidelines? Like, you do that, you have to watch the whole game to get all that. Now, I understand, like, in September, Browns are getting blown out. It's nice out. You want to go outside, go golf. How many, during 0-16, 1-15, how many times did people say, I don't know about you guys. I was outside. I was fishing. I was having a good time with my friends.
If you're going to turn it on, because there are people, they have their own silent protest. If you're going to turn it on, three quarters. Got to get to the third.
So that's your bar.
You got to give yourself a chance to let the team get back in it so you don't have to regret it. So you don't feel, because there's a secret. People can lie to themselves all the time. Look at me. You do not want to have to regret it secretly. And if there's a big comeback, there's always, like, I always remember, what did he do it against the 76ers? LeBron, the 26-point comeback he had when he was with the Cavs.
Yeah.
Like, you never want to say, you never want to walk out on it. So I think the rule has to be at least to the end of the third quarter. And I would say in basketball, now with 20-point leads and how they come and go, I say until about 8 minutes left. Unless Tristan Thompson's already out there, then I'm thinking, all right, well, then I guess that can be it. But I think you got to get to that level.
Yeah, Marcus Morris and Tristan came in.
Yes.
Those guys seem like best friends sitting on the bench. And when they got into the game, you knew it was over.
I waited until that moment, and then I looked at who they had. They had Morris, Tristan,
Merrill.
Sam Merrill was on, but Donovan was still on the court. And I thought, okay, maybe they're just going to switch something up. Then you had Morris swing to the top of the key. He got the ball. He drove the lane. He went to kick it out and threw it directly to Jalen Suggs, who windmilled dunked. And I said, that's enough for me today. I am leaving this game.
Well, famously, 2013, the NBA Finals.
That was my SpongeBob meme.
Yes.
The Miami Heat fans were trying to get back into the arena.
Yes.
Remember, they showed and they wouldn't let them.
Yes.
Which I always said, just let them in. Like, if you're sitting there and you're security and you're all Miami Heat fans, like, let them back in the game. Who cares?
You can't do it. You cannot do it. Because you know that you got to have security, then there's people trying to get in who don't have seats, and then there becomes a big boom.
Which I think is even better. Like, fend for yourself. Let's figure it out in the stands. But that was the moment in 2013. So all those fans just missed Ray Allen hitting that shot, and they end up coming back and winning the final two games and winning the NBA Finals. So maybe it's a different story if you're at the game. You know, you never want to truly give up.
If you're at the game, you have to do what you can to try to stay for the whole game. I think that I've never left a game. I've never left a game out of disgust. The only time I've ever left a game is because a significant other wanted to go. Any sport.
I leave baseball games all the time.
I've left two Indians games early in my life, and they were both because of my high school girlfriend.
Those are the ones that I feel like, you know, how you sports fans feel like they have the ability to affect outcomes through superstition.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And sometimes you'll change your seat when you're watching a game, or you get the old thing, like, I went to the bathroom and then they scored 10 points and now I've got to stay in the bathroom for the rest. I feel like that's my opportunity to say I changed the momentum of that game by leaving.
I used to be that way.
Yeah, we always think there's something we do.
But,
like, I've turned when things have gotten ugly and I was really in fan mode back during the LeBron years and they were down, I would turn the channel off and then come back real quick and then turn it off again. Just look at the score. It was a weird, stupid, immature thing I would do.
I started to do it when LeBron came back. We were still living in West Park.
I have six children.
And that first year, we were just getting ready to move out to Ridgeville. And I started to do things that were just based on superstition, like sitting in the bathroom while the game was going on. Sitting in the one, because there was like a nook that we had, like a dining area, because it was a bungalow in West Park, right? And I sat there, and I stared at the wall. They were in the Bulls series. I'm staring at the wall, and I can hear the game on the TV in the background. I wouldn't look at the TV. And I had to tell myself, go, you have no power over this. You have to watch this game so you can talk about it. And so ever since then, I've had to tell myself, you are powerless in this pursuit. You have to see this go down. And even then, like that Dallas Cowboys game when Odell went crazy and they almost gave that lead up.
Yep.
I turned it off and sat in darkness and silence and waited for my phone to buzz with the Browns update. I did the same thing with the Tennessee game as well as that season. I swear to God, I don't like admitting it, but I was still that way. I know I have zero power over it, and I sat there in darkness in my office waiting for Browns updates to find out whether we won or whether or not something terrible has happened. You got to stay as much as you can. You got to try to stay until the end of the game. Watching 10 minutes left to go third quarter.
Yeah, it's just last night you had the draft. And
fourth quarter.
And you also had the Knicks. I don't know if you cared. You also had the Knicks game against Philly.
I believe I said yesterday, if you choose the draft over the Cavs, you're a bad fan. I was wrong.
Coming up next.
If you stayed for all of that, you might be a bad.
The dangerous one, Daryl Ryder. And as mad as you are, I think you're still feeling pretty good about things. That's at 8:20 on The Fan.